Well, who would think that an amateur investigator, an artist with no scientific or investigative training to speak of, like Bud Hopkins, could pioneer a new era or a new realm of research into something so strange and mystifying as alien abductions, and that that research would attract and envelop the likes of the late Dr. John Mack, a heavyweight from Harvard Medical School, whose own life was transformed by this investigation, and who came to believe that what we know as alien abductions was basically a good and transformative sort of experience for humans in general, and who also believed at some point late in his research and late in his life that these represent intrusions of some other sort of reality, not necessarily aliens from other planets, but maybe something stranger and more wonderful. I'd like to get Bud Hopkins' take on what he thinks these intruders are here for, where they're from, what they represent, and a couple more questions. Then we'll be going to the phone lines and seeing what's on your mind as well. Stay with us for our final hour of Coast to Coast AM. Bud Hopkins, thanks for hanging in there with us tonight. I appreciate you being on the program. John Mack, of course, became a really good friend of yours. It's hard to imagine a more important guy, a more heavyweight guy to get involved in this kind of research. I mean, he brought so much to the field, so much instant credibility. Yet he eventually came to see this in a much different light from you, that it was somehow a transformative experience, that it might be a good experience in the big picture. And he delved into areas where maybe these beings, these visitors, these intruders are not necessarily from other planets, but from some other kind of reality, and that they're trying to help us. What do you make of his theory, and what is your theory now about who these beings are and what they want?
Well, first of all, John had been for years involved in, I would say, a kind of New Age ambience, and it was inclined towards something of a Buddhist outlook, although he never was a Buddhist. But he was a very, very kindly man who had had a lot of very good breaks in life, and I think that he was just constitutionally someone who looked on the good side and wanted things to be fine and better. And of course, as a psychiatrist, he's essentially a kind of psychic healer. So that was his take on things. And when he said it was transformative, of course, the whole experience is transformative. I hope my description of George Obarski's experience would suggest that it was transformative for him. It brings an entire new framework of existence really into your life. It's a basic kind of shift. But I think that John, even though the people he was working with were reporting great trauma in their experiences, I think he tried to sort of minimize the trauma and accent of the hopefulness. And I think that's just his nature. And I think that maybe I was a little more realistic because I'd had maybe a more complex and rougher life than John. And I was never somebody who always inevitably looked on the good side of things. And therefore, I think we had a basic temperamental difference. Now, in terms of those basic questions you asked, first of all, no one has the slightest idea where they come from. And John's idea of that they may be from another reality, I don't think changes anything. I remember a remark that Scott Rogo made. I think he regretted. He said that the UFO occupants were not extraterrestrial in nature, he said, because they're not doing what extraterrestrials would do, which is, of course, a kind of argument that chases its own tail, So we
Yeah,
don't
how
know
do we
what
know what the extraterrestrials would do? We'd only have to guess at it. Sure.
Yeah, it makes no sense. So I just leave the whole question open. I try to use as often as possible the term UFO occupants. The word alien is, of course, a very decent word because it's a negative definition. It defines what something isn't. When I go to Mexico City, I'm an alien, When one of them comes here, he's an alien. It just means what something isn't. So these folks, whoever they are, I hesitate to call them folks, the UFO occupants, are not coming from Connecticut somewhere. They're not us. So the alien term fits. Now, and as to what kind of reality, who knows what their reality is. We do know it's very physical. At least one end of the whole phenomenon. What's very interesting is that the nuts and bolts people years ago didn't like a lot of the things that seemed paranormal that were reported. Like, for instance, mental telepathy. The communication is telepathic. Figures being able to go through walls or be invisible and so on. They didn't like that, and yet the sort of more New Age people didn't like the fact that when UFOs came down, they broke tree branches, did bad things to the soil, and then when they took people, the people were really terrified and often ended up with a small scars and wounds and after effects. So what you've got is something which on one end is eminently physical, on another end is eminently paranormal. So what the heck is it? I don't know. But the actual sense of what happens in these experiences is so similar across a huge spectrum of cases that we at least know what they are doing is trying to produce some kind of mix, genetic mix of themselves and ourselves. In other words, the hybrids. This is what I had discovered in the 80s and wrote about in Intruders. We don't know what those hybrids are for. We don't know whether there's some program of infiltration that has an ominous quality, or maybe something that they will try to do which would be helpful. But so far, no one's given us a cure for cancer or any of the wonderful things that apparently we could have if they were of a more benevolent sort.
I guess basically you have to follow the evidence where it leads, no matter how disturbing the ultimate truth might be.
Absolutely. Nobody, certainly not I, nobody really likes to see where the evidence is pointing. I mean, who wants it to be this way? Who wants people to be terrified children, taken and returned and scared the rest of their lives in a certain sense? I mean, who wants any of that? This is really awful. This is an intrusion into earthly well-being. And so I can't look at it as anything positive.
I want to ask one other question, and it relates to John Mack and something that it's a sort of a tantalizing hint that you have in your book, Art, Life, and UFOs, a memoir. And you hint that John Mack, at the end of his life, was working on a book about the survival of consciousness after death. Is there some sort of a connection between the abduction experience and consciousness surviving after death, or is that just another topic for him?
Well, I think it's, John liked to put these things together. The past lives and so forth. That's again, I think, a kind of a New Age agenda, which kind of slips in. As far as I'm concerned, I can't even deal with it because I don't know what's ahead, whether consciousness survives our death or not. I don't know. I have to be an agnostic on a lot of that, but I do know what's happening and what's happened with the abduction phenomenon that I don't like.
Okay. We're going to the phones. Wildcard line, John in New York. Good morning, John. What's on your mind?
Hello guys. How are you? I'm not trying to debunk it, but I'd like to know, let's say the people that were repeatedly abducted, why can't they ever seem to get it on tape? No type of evidence at all, especially tape. How come they can never have it on tape?
Well, there have been some very interesting cases here where, as an example, David Jacobs, a person he was working with, set up a camera which had a slow speed so that it would record a full 8 hours. And the woman was sure something was going to happen that night. She actually tied a cord around her wrist and tied it to the bedpost, and took her two children, little children, in bed with her. Husband's away. And in the morning, she told, one of the mornings, she did this several nights, she told Dave she thought something happened. So they reviewed, believe it or not, 8 hours of tape, and found at one point, she sits up in bed, unties the little rope that she had, and she carries each of her children into another room off camera. The next exact shot, the next thing that happens, she's back in bed and the children are there. And there's no film footage of her coming back, bringing them back. So we don't know what happened, how this worked. It's impossible to do this by yourself. So at any rate, there are some interesting clues. But, of course, you can't really tape something that, say, might not have happened for the past 4 years. You know, these things don't happen every night. So there are long intervals where nothing seems to happen to people. But it is a very, very mysterious business because there seems to be some alien control over electronics.
And John, yeah, I don't know how much you know about the literature, but there are a lot of cases that are discussed in Bud's books and others where camera equipment, electronic equipment is disabled. And you know, it's easy to say, aha, well, that's convenient if you want to make something like this up. But I suppose if you have the technology to get here from somewhere exotic, you could probably control that stuff.
Well, also, you see, it never works to say, if this were going on, then X, Y, and Z would definitely have been seen, heard, or whatever. And therefore, since we don't have a record of that, all of the stuff that we do have that happened couldn't have happened. It must be somehow a fake. Things don't work this way. I remember in the Pascagoula case, somebody said, it couldn't have happened. They must have made it up because there was a drawbridge nearby. And the guy who sat to lift the gates would have seen this happen if it actually took place. And since he didn't see it and report it, of course, the man might have been asleep. Who the hell knows what he was doing, reading the newspaper. Since he didn't see it, that meant that they were lying. Well, life doesn't work that way. You can't use that kind of a logic, even though I admit we wish we had much more than we have. But we do have, in the case I wrote about, the Linda Cortina case in Witness, we do have external witnesses to an abduction.
Multiple witnesses from different locations, right?
Yes, exactly.
John, thanks. That's a very fair question to ask. We appreciate it. Wildcard line, Mike in Albany. Hi, Mike.
Hey, I don't think you have enough time to listen to the whole story, but I am an abductee.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, I'm 56 years old. It was when I was 15. And I didn't think very much of it. All I know that something keeps me from telling people about it. This is the first time I've tried to talk about it on Coast. I've talked about other things in the past. But the thing is, let's see, where should I start? I knew I was aboard something different, okay? I knew I was aboard a craft. I knew that these people around me were the Grays. They had the big heads and the big eyes, and I figured it out many years later that, hey, wait a minute, this is what I saw. And it was a dream. But the thing that tipped me off that it might not have been a dream was I woke up and I was not in my bed. I was above my bed. And all of a sudden I fell, and my covers were all tucked in underneath me, which, you know, it was really strange. I was like in like a sarcophagus position. My arms were by my side. My legs were straight out. And when I sleep, let's just say, all over the place. But this was, everything was different. The end of what was happening to me, I looked at them and I asked them, does this all work? And then all of a sudden, there was nothing but gray around me, and I felt like I was falling. And I have the feeling that that's what it feels like to be transmitted. Do you know what I mean?
It's a very interesting account, and if you leave your phone number with the station, with a broadcast, perhaps I could get in touch with you later. If you leave a phone number or cell or something, I could call you. We could pick it up. But certainly a lot of the things you're telling me are part of the pattern that we run into again and again. So thanks very much for calling. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. And you might want to check out Bud's Intruders Foundation online for a little bit more information. And if you want to leave your name and number with Gina, we'll put the two of you in contact. Thanks for the call. Bud, I always thought the most interesting cases, and they're almost humorous, but they're always pretty persuasive to me, are these cases where the abductees go to bed wearing one thing and they wake up. They think they had an experience on a ship with a bunch of other people, and somehow the clothes get mixed up and they're wearing somebody else's garments when they wake up.
We have actually more of those cases than you would imagine. Or the clothes are put on backwards or something like this. I have two cases where a couple was driving in the car. The UFO apparently stops the car. They get out and they're standing, the woman on one side and her husband or lover or whatever on the other side, and next thing they know, the UFO's not there. They're both on the same side of the car, and a lot of time has passed. And in that case, and another one exactly like it, when the women got home, they found their earrings were on backwards. The posts were sticking forward instead of back. And I don't think in the whole history of the world, no woman has ever put on a pair of earrings backwards. It's as if the aliens don't understand jewelry or something. I don't know what that means. But there are many cases where somebody ends up with somebody else's clothes. And we've been trying very hard to locate the real owners, but it seems it's a virtually impossible task, of course.
We have to take a break in about a minute, but I wanted to ask you this, and then we'll go back to the phones after the break. There have been some experts who've written about the idea of stopping the abductions, of fighting back, of using the name of Jesus or other invocations. In your experience, does any of that work? Is it fruitful?
Well, I don't know how many people have tried it, but in my experience, I don't think any of that works. It would be nice if it did. But people think sometimes. I remember a man telling me that he was floating up across his bed. He was floating towards the window, and he was absolutely terrified that he was going to drop. He had no control or anything. He was on the second floor. And he just wished and sort of semi-prayed, and zoom, he was back in bed. But of course, what ultimately seemed to have happened is that he had been abducted, and that part of the experience was blocked out. And in other words, he hadn't really, although it might have seemed like it to him, he certainly wanted to think so, that it didn't happen, but in fact, it seemed to really have happened. So I don't know that those things work.
The people do equate this with satanic experiences or demons or things like that. I don't know if you can really tell the difference between the two. Maybe we can get into that when we come back. We'll get to as many of your phone calls as we can. For Bud Hopkins, stay with us for the rest of our fascinating interview with the author of Art, Life, and UFOs, a memoir, Bud Hopkins, here on Coast to Coast AM. We're getting to our final questions, and we'll get to as many as we can for Bud Hopkins right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Bud Hopkins, a question sent in by one of the listeners about your classic books, Missing Time and Intruders. They're still in print, aren't they?
I don't know that they're in print, no. But they're available through Amazon. You can usually get them. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, of course, I hope people will check out the new book that we're talking about this evening, Art, Life, and UFOs, a memoir. It really humanizes the whole adventure that you've been on, Bud. And I really did enjoy the entire book.
Well, I thank you, because in a way this is in summing up my life, it's in a way a very different and very much more important book even than the UFO investigations, which sort of seem in the past now in a way, because this book was an attempt to say, oh, all right, here's a life as I've lived it. And I examined all kinds of aspects, intimate and embarrassing and filled with all kinds of joyful things and experiences. And I just wanted the book to be widely read, and it's I hope that happens.
Well, I do too, because it's a joy. Back to the phones. Andrew in Los Angeles. Good morning, Andrew.
Yes, good morning. It's a real honor to talk to you, George, and your guest. I like both of you because you both are seekers of the truth, and you I think you're both fair-minded and very factual. This subject has really intrigued me for the longest time, probably from the time I was a teenager up till today when I'm in my early 60s. I have gotten to know one person, a very highly intelligent person who is a county worker, a supervisor in the L.A. County area, who confirms what your guest, Bud, has said, that he's definitely been traumatized by this experience, and so has his wife. They were both abductees. They're both now in their 70s, and there can be no doubt in my mind everything that he told me is true, and you could tell it's shaken him to the point where it's affected his very personality. And my question to you is this: is are there any hardcore facts as far as the women who claim that they were abducted and impregnated, and that the fetuses were harvested? Are there any documented facts where these women were actually pregnant, where doctors' offices confirm the pregnancy? And secondly, what is your opinion, Bud? You've been exposed to this for a lot of years, and I know you have a sense of what's going on here. Do you believe this is a plan by either interdimensional beings or people from other planets to infiltrate and take us over from within, or to wipe us out and replace us? I mean, you must have some idea, and I really appreciate your answer to that question.
Well, thanks, Andrew.
That's a huge question, and my basic position is that I am a recent grandfather. I was a delightful little 3-year-old and a daughter and her mother, and my wish was always that they would grow up in as pleasant and earthly environment as I grew up in. And I don't like to imagine some of the things you just mentioned as possible very, very negative outcomes. I don't like to even entertain those thoughts. You know, when I see that little girl, it's not something that I want to have in my on my tapes, so to speak. So I tend to avoid answering that or even thinking about it. So I'm afraid that what I'm going to do right now is just simply duck the question. I say I don't have an answer, but I try to remain personally optimistic because that's part of my nature.
What about the first part of the question, Bud, where he's asking about, do you have good cases of women who are impregnated and then the fetuses just disappear?
Oh, yes. We do have cases where there is a fetus and it disappears, and there are cases with, of course, ultrasound and pregnancy tests and so on. But you see, a doctor isn't going to say if there's no fetus there. And I have two cases which that happened very late when the person had been pregnant for 7 months. And in one of those cases, the woman sued her doctor for malpractice, but there was no way to prove what happened to the child. At the time, she didn't know about her abduction experiences, but so it was just simply she woke up and she was no longer pregnant. And so she blamed her doctor, and of course, there was no evidence that he'd done anything wrong. So she lost her case. But the point is that there is that sort of evidence. What we, of course, need is more graphic evidence of the actual abduction and the removal of the fetus. And that's a little harder to get right now.
Yeah, because otherwise it could just be a miscarriage.
Yes, exactly. So that's, even though, you see, there's, of course, a difference between, say, a three-month a miscarriage and suddenly a normal menstrual flow and no sign of any miscarriage of any tissue.
Thank you, Andrew. Vince in Ontario, Canada. Hi, Vince.
Hi, it's an honor to talk to both of you. I had a question. Coincidence that stems in my experience with an abduction experience. Coincidentally, my first traumatic experience happened shortly after I wrote an email criticizing U.S. government based on some data I had read on a Chinese news agency webpage. And I was wondering, is that just a coincidence, or is there any history of possibly alien abduction and the government agenda to silence their critics by discrediting them?
It's a good question, Vince, because there's a lot of research on military labs or mine lab cases. Bud, what's your take on those?
Well, I join John Mack and David Jacobs in that we don't run into these cases. I have a couple of cases where it would seem a prominent abductee, in one case, Debbie Jordan, who I wrote about in Intruders, seems to have been an object of interest of the government and some possible abduction to study her for a very brief time and perhaps remove it. And this is all very complicated. She remembers these things. But in terms of some sort of widespread program involving the government and the aliens, I've never seen evidence for that. And I don't see any reason, I don't imagine it could happen for any particular purpose. For instance, if the government had any of the technology that the aliens have, and if, say, remote viewing worked and so forth, obviously, the Al-Qaeda the machinery, the people on top, the Laden and so forth, would have been grabbed, put in jail, and George Bush would have been an international hero and reelected and reelected and reelected. None of that happened. So we don't seem to have anything that looks like it has a wide reach. I wouldn't worry. The number of people who send emails criticizing the government is probably thousands and thousands every single day. And I would put this down to a coincidence.
And it probably should be more thousands every day that are doing that. I know I hear the argument all the time, Bud, from, well, not all the time, but frequently from people who say, oh, yeah, well, we made a deal. We cut a deal for technology from the aliens in exchange for our permission to allow abductions, as if these beings need our permission to do anything.
Yeah, that's what's so ludicrous about that. They can do exactly what they want to do. They seem to have the ability to control our behavior if necessary, and to become unseeable when they want to pass through walls. They can do what they want to do. And the idea, I thought when I first heard those things, it was years ago, those rumors, and I had this image of a couple little gray guys, a clipboard standing in, say, Dan Quayle's office as the vice president, saying, yeah, this is a list of people we want this week, is it possible? I mean, the whole thing just seemed utterly foolish to me.
Okay, thanks for the call, Vince. East of the Rockies, Jeremy in Pittsburgh. Hi, Jeremy.
How you doing, guys?
Okay.
I have a comment and a question. My comment is about a movie, The Fourth Kind, which I believe was made to basically run this subject.
Don't see that movie. It was a total fraud. It is a total fiction, and it is terrifying to people who may have had these experiences. It's really one of the most destructive incidents really in recent times in terms of the therapeutic situation for abductees. Awful.
Yeah.
Jeremy, is that... Go ahead.
I think the whole reason why they made that movie was to present it. In the beginning of the movie, it says this is based on a true story.
Yes.
And obviously it wasn't. And the reason why they made that movie was so that it would terrify people, and then they would want to know if it was true. So they would look up whether or not that movie was true and dismiss it as a hoax, and then dismissing the whole subject as not possible. You see what I'm saying? That's the whole.
Well, I just think that's a very complicated extrapolation on a terrible movie. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I think they made it for bucks, is what I think.
Jeremy, thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, Noreen in Montana. Hi, Noreen.
Hi, George. Just a minute. I want to talk to you, George, just a second. Remember the guest you had on that said these black op military were kidnapping people and taking them to these underground bases and doing experiments on them?
That might have been George Norrie had that show. I don't recall doing that interview. You sure you got the right George?
No, it was on your program.
Well, okay. I don't remember it, but
and
go
anyway,
ahead.
Anyway, so I told that to Linda Moulton Howell, and she says, well, that just can't be possible. But your guest said it was. That's what they're doing, and that's why we're ending up with so many missing people.
Now the missing people thing is a total fraud. There are not that many missing people. This was a kind of a fad years ago, that there were all these missing children. They were being eaten and alive by the aliens or whatever, some sort of foolishness. And I started asking people, when I had an audience of, say, a couple hundred people, I would say, okay, you know, hands up if you know a family where somebody, you know personally a family where somebody was murdered. And you get a couple of hands, maybe one or two. And then I asked about, does anybody know a family where a child, say, 10 years old or younger, simply disappeared forever and nobody ever had any idea where the child went? Put your hands up and you'd never get anybody. Which would imply that this is extremely rare. At any given moment, apparently, there are like, say, 20,000 children missing because they ran away or they didn't call home or they were staying with the aunt so-and-so and didn't tell anybody. The next day, of those 20,000, they're virtually all accounted for. At the end of the year, maybe there's a handful of children who are finally totally missing, maybe 8 or 9 or something. But essentially, my statistics are cloudy at this point. But the point is, there's no huge 20,000 people. I ask you, as Noreen, I guess is the name, right? Have you ever met any? Do you know any family where somebody absolutely disappeared and with no clue at all? A family?
Noreen, I think, is gone. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, though. I think you made the point.
Sorry, my rant.
No, that's okay. I'll try to get one more caller in. First-time caller, Adele in Katy, Texas. Hi, Adele.
Hi. How are y'all tonight? I want to thank you for, you know, for the subjects that y'all put out there. And y'all really go to bat for us because there's thousands of us listening to y'all. But my question is to Mr. Hopkins. Mm-hmm. You know, this happened to me a month ago. I woke up in, you know, like at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I noticed, you know, I just sat there for about a minute, and I'm facing the mirror as I wake up, but the mirror was oozing out like another dimension with a big brown eye in the middle of it, mm-hmm. and it was trying to hypnotized me to get close to the mirror, and I became so frightened because, you know, I have the windows covered so that I can sleep good, you know, for the melatonin in my body, and I just became so frightened because telepathically it was talking to me, and it wanted me to get close to the eye, and I ran out, I grabbed my clothes and I ran out. But I knew it was an alien entity in the mirror, but it was oozing out like a blob. And I just, I've never felt so frightened because I knew I couldn't fight this thing.
Yeah, well I'm sorry that you went through this. At least you were able to run out. But this is, I don't know what to make of this account. It's very different. But I'm sorry you've had this problem. But at least you were able to escape. So that's good. That was at the time. George?
Yes.
What we were talking about, I'm sorry to be brusque.
No, that's okay. Thanks for the call, Adele. Go ahead.
We were talking about the interviewers and Larry King, Oprah, et cetera.
Right.
Now I'm adding to the list of a wonderful interviewer, one George Knapp, who had a 3-hour interview with me, which I think was you did a superb job of being organized, fair, clear, and all the things that you want an interviewer to do and you often don't get. But I really want to thank you very, very much for this.
Well, thanks, Bud. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I do have one other question. We got a couple of minutes left.
Okay.
You had hinted at the beginning of the interview that there are some new directions for your research. Is there some kind of new trend that you're seeing or something disturbing or encouraging?
Well, the thing that's different is it's not really so new, but is the idea that there are growing numbers of reports of what seem to be hybrid beings, alien mixes with us, but who seem to look quite human, operating in the real world along with the aliens. And these incidents, which I've had reported to be, from the early 80s, I didn't know what to make of them at the time, but there seems to be truth that there is some kind of hybrid presence and that they're able to operate in the real world, drive cars, and et cetera, et cetera. I wrote about some of this in my last UFO book, Sight Unseen. But the point is, I knew about it for a long time that this was an aspect, but it's of course very hard to get evidence to support strongly. So I haven't really, I didn't make much of it then. But I think it's something we're noticing more now.
And if there are some of these people, if you get the name and figure out who they are, other than just somebody that's seen in a grocery store or something, would there be DNA evidence? Could you figure it out?
That's why it's a very difficult thing. In terms of DNA evidence, Bill Chalker in Australia has been doing work on a long, long blonde hair, which was found in an embarrassing way, really, by an abductee. And DNA work on it is very strange in that it seems to be closest to some tribe in
Bud, we're out of time, and I appreciate it. It's always great to talk to you. I hope you take care of yourself, my friend, and I hope to have you back here many times. Bud Hopkins, author of the new book, Art, Life, and UFOs, a memoir. It has been a pleasure, and hope to see you all here next week. I'll be back next Sunday night. Good night, everyone.